friends. I'm Val.
I'm Courtney.
And I'm Lisa.
And this is My Perfect Romance.
Bow, chicka, bow, bow.
What about all of you?
Or how about my sweet love?
I think we all have a different idea about what romance is.
Well, what is the perfect romance?
Gosh, I don't know, but let's find out.
Well, good morning. I'm good Lisa. Morning.
I'm Courtney.
And we are here with Monica Tanner. So Monica, she is an RLT trained certified relationship coach. She is also the host of the Secrets of Happily Ever After podcast, which I have listened to and personally condone. This podcast transforms marriages just by teaching simple communication, connection, conflict resolution, and commitment strategies. I think, you know, her mission is to lower the divorce rate, which is at an all-time high, and improve marital satisfaction. So through her engaging podcast and her new Amazon best-selling book, Bad Marriage Advice, her vibrant social media community, and couples coaching practice, her expert guidance has impacted thousands of couples by just helping them ditch resentment and roommate syndrome, and getting back to living their happily ever after marriage. So, and I have to say, I love your podcast.
Thank you.
Have started using contracts in communication because, I mean, if you haven't, I'm telling our listeners, you have to listen to this podcast. I've learned about some amazing creams I can use when I want to have fun times with my husband. I mean, there's just like, I'm just saying there's a whole gamut that you go over. That's all of it geared towards like finding your best connection with others. You know, the love of your life. Or maybe finding the love of your life. So I love that.
Yes, and your book is amazing.
Yes.
I just loved how it's laid out. There's lots of...
The formatting.
Yes. It's easy to follow.
Yes.
Easy to pick up. Just read it like, you know,
yes.
Maybe you've got 15 minutes. And that's what I love about it because it's not... Sometimes it's very intimidating to pick up a book about relationships, especially if you're having a hard time in a relationship. It's daunting. It's big. If there's these big books, this is simple. It's
like
easy.
A lot to chew.
Yeah.
But this was not like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like nonfiction. I read a lot of nonfiction sometimes. And I listen to a lot of books and I'm like, that was so much great information, but I need to visually see this to be able to digest it.
Well, it's easy to go back too.
And
you remember something, you're like, you know, what was that she said in that? And then you can easily find it, go back, refer to it.
Or if you just want
it,
a quick reminder of what that, like you've summarized it again. It's just so well formatted.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I wrote it actually for my 21-year-old son when he got married. And yeah, I wanted to make it really digestible for them. It was kind of my panic, like, oh my gosh, what do these kids need to know about marriage? And, you know, like I'm supposed to be the expert and now I have this kid getting married and he's so young and I knew everyone that loved him was going to give him advice and it's all well-meaning. But a lot of it can keep couples stuck for decades. I've worked with couples who are still operating on some of this bad marriage advice. And so I just wanted to offer them like, here's why this is bad marriage advice and here's kind of how to do it better. So it just was meant to be kind of a beginner's guide meets cautionary tale. Like, look out for this well-meaning yet slightly destructive advice.
Yes. And yeah. As I was reading it, I was kind of giggling a little bit. I was like, oh my gosh, I remember getting that advice. Like,
right?
Yes.
Okay. I was hoping for that reaction. So I'm so grateful you said that. I wanted people to giggle, right? I wanted to, you know, share personal stories that would maybe be relatable. That would be like, oh my gosh, I've so been.
Yes. I remember. Oh, sorry.
Courtney. I was just going to say this book comes from love because you love, I mean, we love our children so much and we want them to be happy and have the best lives ever. And, you know, you just put all of that advice, good advice, bad advice together, you know, in this book so that, you know, your children can be happy and as others as well.
Yeah. I feel like, yeah, I love how you turned that bad into like, let's really look at what's beneath that advice.
Yeah.
And understand maybe a different framework to think about that, which was beautiful. And I feel like we try to do that with our podcast because we focus a lot on, you know, romance movies, romance books.
And yes. Like to just, they set you up for a lot of disappointment.
They do.
But I love a good rom-com, right? I mean.
But let's reality check it a little.
Yes.
How realistic is that? Is that right. A fair, like, perspective of a relationship? And some, it's shocking that some of them are so incredibly popular. And I'm like, these are not the way you would want to have an actual relationship. Like, this is very unhealthy.
Yeah. So I'm like interested, like, how, you know, there are so many bad advice. How did you come up with all of them? I mean, you know, I just like asking people what they like, what advice would you give somebody? And you're like, that's bad advice. Or, you know, how did you come up with all of the.
Yeah. Myth. A lot of the ones in that book were given to me when I got married. And I just remember because I was so focused on getting it right. So if I got any type of advice from anyone I just even remotely respected, which was most of the people who came to our wedding, right? Because they were older and experienced. And everybody wants to give you advice when you're young and want to get married, right? Like, we did comment cards at my bridal shower, which is a very common thing. So a lot of that, those pieces of advice were on those cards that I still have. Or people coming through the line at our reception. So everybody wants to tell you how to have a great marriage. And I was very focused on that advice. And I tried to take it to heart. And it took me years into my marriage to realize, like, this one's actually causing a lot more grief than it is helpful. And then now as working with lots of couples, a lot of times when they come in and they'll say, you know, like, I'll say, you know, what is your wish for our time together, right? If you can look back in 6 months and go like, that was the best time, money, energy ever spent. Like, this has made a huge difference. What would have changed? And a lot of times you can hear the echoes of this advice that is really like causing trouble for this couple versus actually helping. And so, yeah, I just tried to pull out all of those things and it kind of snowballs. Like, once you write down a couple of things, you're like, oh yes, in this one. Oh yes, in this one, right?
I mean, I have to laugh because there was one about compromise. And I just remember seeing a Hallmark card about that.
Yeah.
Like, some of these are even, they're so ingrained in society that they are on Hallmark cards.
Yeah. Well, the one about compromise, this one's funny because I love, one of my kind of side gigs that I've been doing forever is when I see a couple that's been married for like a really long time. And, you know, it's like the grandparents that come to my kids' games or like, you know, you see them on social media, like you'll stop a couple that's walking on the beach and they're old and they look so cute and in love, you know, and you're like, what's the secret? I always will ask, I'll stop an older couple and be like, what's the secret to your success? How have you stayed, you know, married? And I've interviewed multiple couples who have been married for 50 years or longer. I have this like side project. I'm like, don't know what I'm going to do with it, but I have so many interviews of couples that have been married for 50 years. And I just want to like, what is the secret? And it's really cool because interviewing these couples, you can tell by the way they answer questions or whether or not they're willing to be interviewed, whether or not they're truly happy, right? Because you've got couples that have been married for 50 years and they tolerate each other. And their answer to most questions is like pretty surface, like that you can tell that they don't really like each other that much. They're just like, you know. And then there's couples that you interview and they're so eager to tell you things because they've like figured it out. And it's been through, you know, learning and actually putting into practice the lessons that they've learned in the crucible of marriage, right? And so it's just really cool. But so many times I'll say, what's the secret to your success? And they'll say, you have to learn how to compromise. And I giggle a little bit because when I hear the word compromise, I mean, ask, what do you guys think of when you hear that?
Giving something up.
a lot of sacrifice, a lot of meeting in the middle. Like neither of us actually get, like when I say, when I think of like compromising on like where to eat, I'm thinking like I wanted an expensive restaurant. My husband wanted something cheap and we ended up like at Chili's where neither of us really got what we wanted. We ate food, but it wasn't like what I was hoping for or what he was hoping for. And so you've got to be careful compromising because eventually you've given up so much of yourself that you're either totally keeping score. Like I hear couples a lot of times like say things like, I've changed the baby's diaper, you know, this time, so it's your turn. Or you chose the restaurant last time, it's my turn. There's a lot of scorekeeping that comes with compromise.
Yeah.
And a lot of resentment of like, gosh, I had all these plans and dreams, but you know, this person that is different than me, we've compromised and sacrificed so much. And so I caution people to be careful with compromise because it really, if you're compromising, you're not really asking a lot of questions. You're not really getting to know and understand your partner very well. And you're not learning to appreciate these differences. So instead of being like, ugh, why can't you just see it my way? It'd be so much easier if you would just see it or do it my way. Now I have to compromise versus collaboration, which is what I teach in the book, which is such an important, crucial skill to, I think, creating your happily ever after love story, which is the goal, right? The goal is a deep and abiding friendship where you don't feel like you've sacrificed in order to make the marriage work. You feel like the two of you have created something that you couldn't have come up with on your own. And that's really taking your differences, getting curious about what is my position on this issue? How did I get here? What do I really, really value about this? And you can be talking about something as small as where to eat dinner or as large as like how are we going to educate our children, right? Like these are big decisions that couples, and a lot of them end up compromising. When you could just get really clear on what do I value about this? What's important to me? What do I not want to give up here? And what does my partner feel really strongly about that they value and they don't want to give up? And then with collaboration, you're moving up the level of solution because you're understanding each other. You've got information out on the table. And now you can get creative and resourced about a solution that neither one of you could have come up with on your own. You're widening your perspective and it's such a beautiful process.
We come into a partnership, into a relationship because we want to grow with each other. Like what's the song from The Wedding Singer? I want to grow old with you.
Right.
One of my favorite songs.
I don't want to just get old. I want to
grow. I don't want to get old. I want to grow old. But if you're constantly compromising, neither one of you get to grow. And so that's not the way we want to come into a partnership.
Yeah,
for sure.
And your solution, it's both people are getting something they want. It's not
so you
for me. It's we're both coming together and getting something we want out of this.
Yeah,
and you know, I think that's really a nice way to look at it. Like you said, you're kind of rising above rather than somebody letting go of things. It's both people getting something.
Holding on to something. Yes, because there's so many options and resources nowadays. And I think that maybe, you know, generations or decades past, maybe compromise was required because there just wasn't as many options. We didn't have as many expectations for marriage. But now, I mean, there's millions and millions and millions of ways to do the same thing. I mean, we have every restaurant under the sun. Down the street from my house, we have a sushi and ramen restaurant. I mean, who would think to combine those two things? Sushi, I think high end. I think, you know, like an experience.
Ramen is like we're getting through college.
Exactly. But this restaurant that is sushi and ramen is perfect for my husband and I because I love seafood. I love the experience of going out to a nice dinner and, you know, eating something that I can't actually like make at home.
Yeah.
And my husband, he doesn't like seafood. He doesn't like spending a lot on food. He just thinks it's like fuels him. Like he doesn't care.
Yeah.
So he would love to just go out to eat and get some cheap thing that is familiar to him that fills his belly. So I'm like, sushi for me, ramen for him. perfect. My sushi costs a little more. His ramen costs much less. We both get exactly what we want and value. Neither of us has to give up something in order to meet in the middle, right? Like, I hate that idea of like meeting, let's meet in the middle. No, let's elevate this so that we're both getting exactly what we want.
I feel like this is like the advice all of our kids need to hear.
Like, totally.
And if you put it together in a book so well.
Yeah. And I'm talking about like maybe an inconsequential choice, like where are we going to eat dinner? But when you talk about like, where are you going to work? Like, how are you going to make a living? How are you going to educate your children? We have so many options now that the generations before us didn't have. I mean, you can private school, public school, you can homeschool, you can world school now. Like, I mean, you can do everything online. You can do mixes of both. I have my kids' friends that, you know, they homeschool for half the day and they do their electives at school or their math at school or whatever. I mean, there's hundreds and millions of ways to create a great education for our children. There's no reason to compromise, but let's like take what do I value. I value like the social connection, this and that, whatever my spouse is like, wants to have more control over the curriculum or whatever. Why can't we take both of those things and make create together? And that's the word I love. Collaborate, cooperate, create something really, really special. And what I love to tell my people is like, sometimes it doesn't work out. Like sometimes you've collaborated and you've created this amazing solution and you're like, this isn't actually working for my kid. Now you've got more data to work from to go back to the table and collaborate, but you still have what you value, what your partner values, what your kid values. You've got all this data to work from instead of just being like, how do we figure out something that I don't hate and you don't hate?
Well, it's okay to fail too. Like that's like learning something about yourself and what doesn't work is actually not a failure.
Yeah. And nothing is permanent anymore. Like we don't, you know, work at jobs for 50 years until we get a pension or, you know, like I was just out to dinner with a group of friends and she was like, I got so tired of the drive to this, what's it called? It's not a private school. It's not a public school. It's a special school. Charter. Yes, you got it. Yes. So she was driving her kids to the charter school and she was getting so tired of doing like two different directions and times driving to this charter school that she's like, I just pulled my kids out mid-semester, put them in the local public school with a bunch of their friends. And she's like, they're thriving. It's amazing. Like nothing's permanent anymore. Like you don't like what you're doing, change it. Like nobody, it's like not a thing anymore.
So true. I love that. So I am curious because maybe some of our listeners don't understand what it means to be RLT certified or a relationship coach. And I kind of looked into it a little bit myself too. I'm like, what's the difference between that mode of thinking and some maybe like a marriage counselor?
Yeah.
Can you kind of define that?
Yeah, RLT stands for Relational Life Therapy. It's a modality of, it's a way of working with couples created by Terry Real. He's a best-selling author. He got his start working with men with depression. Like that was the big discovery that he made is male depression. And then his story is that he got flooded with calls from wives who were like, my husband has depression. I don't know how to deal. And so he would fly these couples in to his office in Boston and work with them. And he was having such amazing success. Now, he was a therapist, a family system therapist, right? And he was finding that he was having success by not following the traditional script, right? There's a lot of things that are really important to RLT and unique to it. I mean, it borrows from a lot of different other modalities, but there's a lot of things that are unique to it that are super successful. It creates behavioral change quickly. One of the things is that we take sides. We take sides usually with the weaker partner who has trouble finding their voice. And so we say we help the mighty to melt and the weak to stand up. And it's not like individual empowerment. A lot of times people go to therapy, especially I would say like women who have not had traditionally had a voice in the marriage, and they learn. What happens is this individual empowerment is I was weak and now I'm strong. Go screw yourself, right? Like, screw you. I haven't had a voice for all that. And here are my demands. And it's a lot of individual empowerment. Sometimes individual therapy can work against the couple versus what we call relational empowerment, which is I was weak and now I'm strong. I'm going to stand head to head with you and fight for the things that are important to me because our relationship is so important to me. I want us both to have a say. Going back to that collaboration, it's not just you get your way because I am weak. It means I'm going to stand up for the things that are important to me. And now we have the strength of both of us in the relationship. We can elevate our experience. So that's just one of the ways in which I believe that RLT or relational life therapy is far superior to older, I would say,
traditional marriage counseling kind of.
Yeah.
That's interesting to me because I might be kind of have bought into the older paradigm where I'm not a huge fan of couples counseling and you might have to set me straight.
Yeah. Let's talk about it.
I'm like, okay, if I'm coming to this relationship and I'm like a half charged battery, I'm going to drain this other person. So I need to kind of work on myself sometimes and build that and then come to this relationship and we can, you know, then support each other rather than drain each other. And I've just never thought of it that way.
Like, I love that analogy. Right. Together. Yes. But there's also so much like discovery and compassion and wisdom when you're doing your actual individual work in the presence of your partner, because you can go to individual therapy and be like, oh, like, let's, you know, my childhood set me up for this and this and this. And you're doing all this individual work and you are getting stronger in the relationship. However, the power that comes from doing that in the presence of your partner, like your support system, right? Now they're understanding more of your story of how you know, why you are the way that you are, what the programming that went into you. And now they can see this inner child inside of you. I used to laugh. So my mom, she has her PhD, she's a therapist, she's amazing. And she used to have this like little shrine to her and her partner. It's like pictures of them as young kids, right? Like maybe 6-year-old kids, right? And it's on a dresser in her bedroom. And I used to be like, before I understood any of this inner child work, I used to be like, mom, what? Like, this is really weird. Like, she has candles around it. And like, it's like, just like kind of like a shrine to,
yes,
to their little people, right? To their younger versions of themselves. And I'm like, mom, this is weird, right? But now doing relational life therapy and understanding the impact of the younger version of yourself, the version of yourself that learned to protect you in the environment you grew up in, and how that younger version of you now wreaks havoc. We used to say adaptive then, maladaptive now, right? So a lot of times these adaptations that we grew up learning protected us and like really made us who we are, but they wreak havoc in our relationships now. And so, however, but we always respect the infinite wisdom of that inner child. We, you know, they were so pivotal and crucial to how we grew up. And so I love it that, you know, my mom is like, it helps me to respect, see, sometimes when I get so upset with my partner for something that they're doing, I remember that 6-year-old boy needed this adaptation to survive in the circumstances he grew up in, right? And so it's both understanding and respecting your partner, right? There is a 6-year-old inside of your partner that was scared or lonely or overlooked or needed to, you know, be a certain way. And when we can see that about our partner, so we do some, a lot of inner child work, but it's not, I'm individually doing your work with you, but in the presence of your partner. So now they can have compassion and respect for how you formed, right? And so I just think there's so much we do in RLT that's beautiful and it's fast, right? I had a couple that I'm working with that I've been working with them for only a few months. And the amount of progress they've made in this very short period of time, we had basically our last session and I was like, my gosh, like my own children. So I have two adult children that have grown and left my home, right? And I'm like, it's like, I'm so proud of them. If you parent well, you parent yourself right out of a job, right? I mean, they're doing wonderful things. They're independent. They don't need me as much anymore. They're like, you know, I'm so proud of them. And also I miss them with all of my heart. And I felt this way about this couple because it was so amazing to think about the progress that they've made. When they came in, they were like, you know, asking the question, like, I don't know if we want to stay in this marriage. Like, we're really, you know, not sure. And to just a few months later, they're like, we're doing great. We're really enjoying each other. We're learning so much about each other. And I'm like, and I'm going to miss you so much.
That sounds so incredibly rewarding. Are there any aspects that you that are difficult or challenging?
I mean, it's just like you described. It's like raising children, right? There is parts that are so hard that will stretch you, or you're watching your kids go through something so difficult and you want to take the pain away, but also you know that this is what's growing them up and strengthening them, giving them resilience, you know? So yeah, I feel all of that with my clients as I watch them grow into these stronger versions of themselves, and they are have more to offer in their relationship. But yeah, letting them go is so hard. And most of my clients, they'll check in with me every 6 months or so. So it's not like I'm saying goodbye forever, kind of like my kids, right? Like they're off on their own. They're living these amazing lives. So they check in with their mom here and there, right? So
yeah,
it is. It's beautifully rewarding, but it is so challenging at the same time as you're watching them go through these difficult challenges, but also grow and learn, and you don't want to take it away from them. Yeah, I love it. I love it so much. And I would, you know,
that is so relatable as a parent. Like, I know Courtney has like helped me through, like, she's like, just sit back and let them experience this failure.
Right.
It's easy to say, right? Like, I say that to Lisa all the time when it comes to your own stuff, you know, it's hard. You know, I think that's probably, probably one of the really rewarding things about being a coach is kind of being on the outside looking in. It's harder.
Like, I know this is going to be hard for a minute, but you are going to be stronger for it. And that is the reward.
Yes.
But it's hard to sit back.
So I have a really long question. Share with me here. I wanted to ask you so many things in just a small question. So we often discuss the likelihood of the couples in books and movies we review actually staying together. The idea of the happy ever after, we like to look at the relationship dynamics through a real life lens, similar to what you explore in your podcast and book. For example, how does the couple communicate? How do they deal with conflict? What do commitment and emotional connection look like for them? Of the strategies you share in your book, Which are your favorites, especially when it comes to building relationships that truly last?
Okay. Sorry, I love this.
Very long.
I love it. I love this question. And let me parse it out, because this is actually the focus of my podcast this year. It is a relational life therapy term, and it's beautiful. And I want to break it apart because I do think it is the most like crucial, important, pivotal thing that we can learn. And it's how to have compassionate curiosity for your partner's subjective reality. So quickly breaking that down, because it's a big sentence, to understand that you and your partner have different subjective realities. And in any relationship, there's always two truths, right? So a lot of times
it's perceptual. I really truly believe that.
Yes. So many times a couple will come to me and they're so frustrated because they're like, this would be so much easier if my partner would just see it my way or do it my way. Or they're discussing an experience or like something that happened in the past and they're fighting over the details. It happened this way. No, you did this. No, this is what happened. Right? These are the details. Like, it didn't happen, you know, and they're going back and forth. And the reality is their experiences will never match up because they have two different realities. They could have been in the same room and the same exact thing was happening for both of them, but it was happening differently for both of them. Just like if we all went to a, you know, some sort of, if we all went to the same exact movie, we all saw the same thing happening on the screen, but it had a different experience. Like, I'm going to, Yeah, like a beautiful love story, I'm going to cry. And my husband's going to be like, oh my gosh, that was a waste of 2 hours of my life, right?
We all come to the table with different experiences, different feelings about those experiences, different knowledge. So there's no way that we can look at something and as, you know, objectively as we think we're looking at it and come up with the same conclusion.
Exactly.
We're all so unique.
There is not one thing. There's two subjective realities. And when we stop fighting to make our realities match and we start trying to understand our partner's subjective reality, that is having compassionate curiosity. It's asking questions. And here's where a lot of people get stuck. A lot of people are like, but if I try to understand them, do I have to give up my position, right? So if I understand your subjective reality or your position or how you see this, do I have to give up mine? And the answer is no. That is the beautiful thing about compassionate curiosity, is because the better we understand our partner, we're letting them be seen, we're witnessing them, we're learning more about them. But we don't, two truths can be true at the same time. So if you're fighting about something that happened and you're like, it didn't happen that way, you can still understand your partner's experience. Like, I understand why this was hard for you, or I understand the experience you had, and I experienced it differently, and I see it differently, and I feel differently. Like, I see why you feel so strongly about this thing, and I feel differently about it. And this other thing is important to me, right? It's both and. It's the power of this and is so incredibly, when we're talking about relationship, emotional, physical, sexual, all of it, the power of and is really, really strong. So when you say like, your question, my answer is learning to have compassionate curiosity for your partner's subjective reality. And it is a skill set. It is just like learning anything else. If you want to get good at a sport or playing an instrument, it's a skills. You've got to learn skills, and you're going to be bad at them before you're going to be good at them. But I guarantee, even doing the skills badly, you're going to be so far ahead as if you don't do it at all. And so I always say relationship is a skill set, and it's one worth learning. So if you will prioritize learning relational skills, which we teach in relational life therapy, you will be giving yourself, your children, your grandchildren, the greatest gift you possibly could. And that is the ability to heal within a relationship.
I love this so much. Okay, so last year, my New Year's resolution was to be curious.
Good.
And if I'm ever going to get a tattoo, which I don't yet, but I'm going to someday, that's what it'll be. It'll be a little be curious.
I love that.
I feel like it's so hard when we're relating to another person, communicating or whatever, what you're working on something together. And, you know, you are in your head and you're thinking it's supposed to be this way. Just being curious about maybe what the other person is thinking and leaning into that curiosity and being okay with being two individuals with two different experiences. I would love for that to be spread across the world.
Me too. And it's not just for your romantic relationship. I mean, obviously it's super important to your romantic relationship, but for your kids, for your parents, for your coworkers, for your neighbors. Imagine if everybody stayed open and curious to other people's subjective reality. Imagine what this world would be like if we all just stayed open and curious. We'd be able to discuss literally anything.
Mm-hmm. And not feel like we needed to hate each other afterward. I know.
Then missiles.
I don't know, my coworker and I were having a really deep conversation one time, and he just couldn't understand why I didn't get his perspective. I'm like, because I'm coming to the table with like a different life experience. And I'm like, if we want to talk math, like I will agree with you 100% of the time that 2 + 2 is always 4. And I think that is the only truth there is math. Everything else, it's so individualized. And like, we just have to lean into that curiosity and be okay with it. And it is okay.
Well, you know, everyone makes decisions or does anything based on their own experiences. And if you can understand what their life experiences are and why they chose to do what they, you know, or they choose to do what they're doing or see things a certain way. Like, I love that idea of standing back and saying, I can see why you are feeling the way you're feeling, why you saw it the way you did, and how you're reacting.
And I experienced it differently.
Yeah.
We just reviewed the movie Past Lives. I don't know if you've seen it, but I really feel like they did that for each other.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was one of like, it was just one of the most beautiful like love stories I've seen in a long time. It was so well done. But I was like looking at things through that lens. And that's like, this is a truth that you are speaking that I know to be absolutely true. Like, this is what I love. And this is what I hope to be. And I'm not always perfect at it, but like, that's like,
none of us are, right?
For sure. Yeah. But like, that is something that I really think we could bring to that table every time we're looking at that.
Yeah.
Through that lens. Cause I agree. That's just such great advice.
Yeah. And if you think about it, here's the danger, because as humans, we can only see things from our perspective, from the experiences that we've had and from, right? And so the danger of not being open to other people's experiences and perspective is that you could be stuck looking at the butt of an elephant for your entire life. Now imagine if you were only willing to see things one way and you're looking at the butt of an elephant. And all of these other people in your life, these important people who are trying to show you, they're standing on different sides of the elephant, right? Your spouse could be looking at the front of the elephant and you're not willing to see their perspective. And so you're stuck looking at the butt, like that's all you'll ever see. But if you'll get really curious about what they're seeing and their perspective, now you're getting an idea of what this magnificent animal looks like, right? You can, the two of you together can now put together what an elephant looks like. Otherwise, you're just going to be standing there thinking that an elephant's butt is all there is to see.
I know. Yeah. That's kind of, I'm going to get semi-political, but like, I feel like that's one of the reasons this country was formed and why we have so many perspectives, because like, how cool is it that we have this like democracy where we can look at things from so many perspectives and have such a good picture. But right now I feel like the curiosity about that picture is leaving us. And I'm sad for that, because that's why America was formed, was so that we could see.
Really good. Yeah. Yeah. It's a melting pot. It's a melting pot. And the strength in that is massive. If we will, get curious about the way other people are experiencing things. Yeah. There's so much power in that. Otherwise, you're right. We're closing in and now we're just looking at the elephant butt.
Yeah, we're still looking at elephant butts or elephant, I don't know, a tusk, I don't know, whatever. And it's like, oh, let's see the whole thing again, people. Let's be curious. That's what I would love.
Yeah, I love that.
Bring it back.
Well, any last words advice for romance enthusiasts?
I mean, gosh, I love a good rom-com, but a lot of times I watch them now and I'm like, oh, these guys need to learn how to make requests. These guys need to learn how to fight for what they want. More than anything, they need to learn how to repair, right? The couples that have the hardest time are the ones that don't have a mechanism of repair, because all relationships are an endless cycle of harmony, disharmony, repair, strength, resilience, respect, passion, intimacy. They all come through the repair process, and you can't get to repair unless there is disharmony. And so don't be afraid of your differences. Don't be afraid of getting into it with your partner about having a different point of view or perspective on something, because learn how to respect each other's differences, be curious about them. And if you get entangled in something, just learn how to repair. I would say there's nothing more important you can do in this life than learn relational skills. That's what it's about. That's what we're here. We're wired. We're hardwired as humans for connection.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, learn all the things there are to learn, but spend some time and effort learning how to have great relationships.
I love this so much. Well, so, okay, on that note, I would love for our listeners to know how to connect with you because you've got a social media, a vibrant social media community, which I think is fantastic. And you've got your book, you've got your podcast. Tell us how we can find all of this.
Thank you so much. Yes, all of it is on my website, which is my name, monicatanner.com. There you can learn how to get to my podcast, how to get to my social media stuff, and how to work with me. So monicatanner.com.
I love it so much. And I'll put it in show notes.
Thank you. You know.
Yeah. All the links and all the good stuff. So my goodness, it has been such a pleasure to talk to you. I'm like, I feel invigorated.
I've learned so much through this book and, you know, and I feel just enlightened talking to you today. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
For our listeners, I mean, we always have our same thing. Our website, www.myperfectromance.com. And it has all the links to our stuff, but I have the author's page. So I like to include a bio and about your book or whatever. So, you know, people can look there too. So anyway, thank you guys. Yeah. For listening. And thank you, Monica, for reaching out. And it was such a joy and pleasure to talk to you.